space. It never ends. It never will. And yet, here you are, drifting through the nothing. Will you float, or will you sink? To the place where the mind melts and the body dies. Below the surface of reality. Here, the only thing you know is you and the stories you carry. Welcome to the Cryopod Tapes.
Gloom by James Carlson. Like so many other neighborhood dive bars, the Bridge Street Elixir House was an undeniably dark and depressing place. While the moonlight hours saw it transformed into a gathering spot for nighttime revelers, it mostly served as a disreputable haunt for brooding day drinkers from noon until early evening. The latter clientele knew the doors were about to open to the paying public, when through the haze of pollution hanging over the city, the sun can be seen nearing the end of its ascent. One such individual, Ollie Quinn, approached the Elixir House. More than a small trace of vomit was still evident outside on the sidewalk, despite a lazy attempt by one of last night's staff at hosing it away. Ollie watched as the other barroom regulars simply stepped around the mess to enter. One woman even dropped her burning cigarette into the wet chunks and watched it extinguish with a hiss, grinning as the glowing cherry turned dead and black on contract. The mingling smells of stale beer and flavored liquors wafted out into the streets to join with the stench of garbage emanating from an overflowing dumpster in the alley. Ollie wrinkled his nose and shook his head as he stepped over the mess and into the bar. Inside, he was met by the familiar dim light as it tried to contend with a rather obstinate murkiness. As he strode across the room, the sole of his shoes made an irritating sound against a floor unpleasantly sticky from a combination of sloshed brew, spilled cocktails, and dirty mop water. More graffiti decorated the already busy walls of the hallway leading to the unsanitary restrooms than the previous morning. Among the half-legible scribbles and crude doodles there, the majority on a scale from amusingly obscene to downright offensive, were hurried but decent sketches that almost resembled art. Like the others whose first drinks were ordered at midday, Ollie was nevertheless unbothered by this gutter ambience. He preferred it over the clean, well-lit watering holes in the less seedy parts of town. A part of him was convinced he belonged here, so he sat on his usual stool at the bar. Then he motioned to the barkeep and ordered his usual drinks. Bourbon. Neat with a beer black. Ollie didn't have any special attachment to the Elixir House. It was just conveniently located downstairs from his studio apartment, and the drinks were strong and cheap. Of the half-dozen patrons imbibing throughout the establishment, few were engaged in conversation. As he often did, Ollie kept to himself. The bartender, a 50-something bottle blonde whose demeanor suggested she derived no satisfaction from her job, didn't speak much to customers unless summoned to fill a glass or provide a fresh bottle. Instead, she leaned wearily against the wall, her long pink fingernails tapping against the screen of her smartphone as she half-heartedly scrolled through online content. Ollie didn't have a phone anymore. Its screen had inexplicably shattered, and he had never replaced it. His needs were simple. He just wanted to collect his monthly disability checks and spend his days and nights drinking away the dread. A costly endeavor which also took from a modest cash inheritance from a deceased grandparent he had hardly known. Once safely tucked away in a savings account, the bulk of his money had quickly become a pile of crumpled bar receipts. Ollie remembered when the dread began. At first, it was a subtle, creeping thing occupying the back of his mind. In the span of 2 years, it went from a manageable anxiety disorder to a series of severe panic attacks and mental breakdowns. Both had led to hospitalizations and stays in psychiatric facilities. Preceding these episodes were awful visions, vivid hallucinations, the doctors had called them, which showed him a dark, yet highly advanced city populated by strange and terrible beings. Surrounding this city was a harsh wasteland inhabited by creatures that crawled menacingly about, brutally devouring smaller creatures and defecating steaming piles on the bones of earlier kills. Beneath the churning grey and purple sky, there was no vegetation, just so much dirt and rock and meat. This realm was somehow connected to the world in which Ollie lived, corrupting it as surely and gradually as rust does a piece of metal to the elements. This filled Ollie with a constant fear, an intolerable fear, grips of which he felt the need to drink until he passed out, or at least inebriated enough not to care anymore. Feeling the dread swell in his skull like a mighty wave in a stormy sea, Ollie urgently withdrew a pill bottle from his jacket pocket. Fumbling with the childproof lid, he finally succeeded in opening it. He then shook a pill from the container into the palm of his hand, put it in his mouth, and washed it down with a sip of beer. Reasonably certain he had acted quickly enough to prevent the wave from capsizing the little vessel of sanity still afloat up there, he sighed, wiping away several beads of sweat that had formed on his forehead. He knew the pill wouldn't kick in immediately, yet the fact that its effort was imminent did its part to alleviate his symptoms somewhat.
"You know you're not supposed to take those with alcohol, right?" came a male voice from a few stalls down the bar.
Ollie met the man's eyes with an icy stare that conveyed precisely what he wished to express on the subject.
"Mind your own goddamn business."
"Forgive me," the stranger laughed. "I tend to stick my nose where it doesn't belong. It occasionally annoys people, but it comes from a place of concern, for what that's worth."
Ollie said nothing, returning his attention to his drinks.
"My name is Tobias Barnes," the man said. "Most people just call me Toby."
Ollie reluctantly introduced himself to the persistent stranger. After all, he was crazy, not rude. Toby looked to be in his late 30s, perhaps a few years older than Ollie. His complexion was more cream than coffee, and long, frizzy black locks sprung wildly from his scalp. Removing a pair of black half-rimmed glasses, he began polishing the lens with his shirt sleeve. As he did, he leaned conversationally towards Ollie.
"So what do you do, Ollie?"
"I drink," Ollie replied, lifting his bottle. "What about you?"
"I'm in technologies, among other things."
"And why are you drinking here in the middle of the day, if you don't mind me asking?"
"It's part of my job," Toby shrugged.
"Throwing a few back at a crappy dive at lunchtime is part of your job?" Ollie asked, doubtfully.
"As a matter of fact, yes."
"You've got my attention," Ollie admitted. "Please explain how your occupation and boozing are in any way related."
"Well, my work leads me to people like you, Ollie. It just so happens they're often found in establishments like this."
"Me?" Ollie said with some confusion. "What are you talking about?"
"Let me guess."
Toby left his seat to occupy the one beside Ollie.
"You've suffered lately.
More than you'd ever thought possible. You don't trust what's in your own head. You're plagued by constant fear, and your grasp on reality has become tenuous. Am I right?"
"How could you possibly know that?" Ollie asked wearily.
"As I said, it's my job to know, but it's also my job to help."
"Really?"
Ollie said, with unmasked skepticism. "How the hell could you help me?"
"I can't explain here. Such a conversation requires a more private location."
"Nice try, man." Ollie laughed. "You can piss off now."
"Oh, you're mistaken. It's nothing like that."
"No?"
"It's just what I revealed to you might be upsetting, for a lack of a better word."
"I have no doubt."
Seeing that he was losing Ollie's attention, Toby added,
"In your waking dreams, You've seen a city with the strange beings, haven't you? And you've seen the wastelands of the things that dwell there.
Ollie said nothing to this, opting instead to turn and face Toby. His azure blue eyes met the other man's russet brown eyes intensely.
Yes, Ollie, I know all about it. It's quite real, I assure you.
Okay, then. What's it got to do with me?
That place has infected you, Toby said,
as if such a statement didn't beg for elaboration.
How? And why?
Like I said, we should go someplace else so I can show you what I'm talking about.
I have an apartment above the bar. We can go there.
Perfect. Shall we?
Sure. But you're paying for the drinks, Ollie said, draining in turns the contents of the glass and the bottle.
Toby placed two bills on the bar, a 20 and a 10. Standing, he slung the strap of a black case over his shoulder. The two men exited the bar and were met by an equally dreary November day outside. They proceeded to enter a door on the side of the building. The entryway smelled strongly of urine. Noticing a look of disgust come over Toby's face, Ollie said,
"Yeah, I know. People sometimes wander in here when the bar closes. The drinks they've consumed inevitably catch up with them while they wait for car services to pick them up, so women tend to squat over there by the mailboxes, and men direct their streams towards the corner by the door. Foul bastards, all of them."
The smell followed them halfway up a narrow flight of creaky stairs leading to a second-story apartment above.
"This is me," Ollie said, standing in front of the last door on the left.
Toby cocked his head inquisitively at a single word scrawled largely across Ollie's door in permanent marker.
"Asshole." "Ex-girlfriend," Ollie said, by way of explanation. "Don't ask."
Toby didn't ask. Had Toby made such an inquiry, Ollie might have told him about a former partner he loved very much. A partner from whom he'd felt the need to sever all ties before his life spiraled even more out of control, before his mind unraveled any further. Since then, he'd had a few one-night stands. A woman lover here, a male lover there. Nothing of substance. All of them temporary distractions from the dread. Once inside, Ollie made for the fridge. He opened the door. Its sad contents were only beer, a moldy slice of pizza peeking up from a folded sheet of aluminium foil, and a few expired condiments.
"Beer?"
"Yes, thank you."
Ollie grabbed two bottles, one for himself and one for Toby.
"Have a seat."
Ollie motioned towards the chairs at the humble table in the kitchen area. Toby sat, taking a swig. Ollie lowered himself into the chair opposite Toby.
"Now," Ollie said, "how about their explanation?"
"Of course. But first, I must ask, do you have a mobile phone? A smartphone?"
"It's not exactly in working order at the moment."
"Is the screen shattered?"
Surprised that Toby knew about his broken phone, Ollie nodded his head to the affirmative.
"May I see it?"
Ollie fetched the phone from a drawer beside the kitchen sink and handed it to Toby. Toby inspected it.
"Right. Before your phone broke, did you happen to click on any suspicious links?"
"I may have,"
Toby said in a way that suggested he most certainly had.
"Do you remember the site you were visiting when you clicked on it?"
"No, and I'm not answering any more questions until you tell me what the hell is going on."
"It's easier if I just show you. But be warned, this may be extremely unsettling."
"Consider me warned."
From his black case, Toby withdrew a laptop computer. He opened it and pressed the power button. The screen came to life with a blue glow. Using the keyboard, he entered a series of commands.
"This is a rather complex application I personally developed. It's called DRF, or Dimensional Resolution Filter. It shows the truth of your condition."
"Which is?"
"You have a ghost parasite living on you."
"Okay. Two things. First, I don't know what the hell that is. And second, you're obviously even crazier than I am, which is saying something."
It's better if I just show you,
Toby said, turning the laptop to face Ollie.
Just look at the screen. The camera will capture your image, process it, and unveil the truth. Brace yourself, though. As I've said, it's pretty unsettling.
Leaning toward the computer, Ollie looked in terror at his digital image staring back at him from the bright screen. Attached to the back of his head was a hideous creature, its empty black eyes peering over the brown hair of his crown. Dark skin glistened wetly like that of an amphibian, while six bony appendages held tightly to its temples, cheeks, and chin. Toby raised a mirror behind Ollie's head to show him something equally, if not more disturbing. Below the creature's pronounced spine, at its tail end, there protruded a network of wiry tendrils which had been worked into Ollie's flesh and plugged into key points in his brain and nervous system. Having seen enough, Ollie slammed the screen of the laptop closed and frantically shot up his chair.
What the fuck was that?
He asked, panicked.
Like I told you, a ghost parasite, Toby answered calmly.
I'm freaking out here. Honestly, I'm about to lose my shit.
It's going to be okay, Ollie. You have to settle down.
How did it get there?
Ollie raised his hand to his head, still not remotely calm.
Wait, screw that,
Ollie interrupted.
How do we get it off?
Maybe I should start by answering your first question.
Fine, but hurry.
It's never easy to sum this up, but I'll try.
Ollie paced around the room.
Well, go on.
You seem like a smart man, Ollie. So I assume you know that the universe is immeasurably vast and complex. Yet we take our world, this planet right here, for granted. Rarely do we consider how complex and wondrous it is. I mean, we're still discovering new things here all the time. Alas, some of those things turn out to be horrors we've never expected to find.
I guess that's true, Ollie agreed.
The concept may seem like so much fiction to you, Toby continued, but other dimensions exist. Other dimensions that have close relationships with ours. Symbiotic relationships, really. We, and by we, I mean a select few in the scientific community, have discovered proof of this. Follow me so far?
Ollie nodded, although he wasn't sure he fully understood.
What if I was to tell you, Ollie, that there's a dimension in which a highly evolved species exists, along with a variety of considerably lower creatures, and it overlaps our reality?
Had I not beheld that ugly thing clinging onto my head, I'd tell you to seek professional help. But I'm a little more open-minded than usual right now.
Though this dimension isn't perceptible to us, Toby continued, it's all around us. So too are its inhabitants.
Okay, go on.
In recent years, they've taken quite an interest in humanity. Something we wouldn't have known had we not stumbled upon their existence in a research and development facility near Philly. After I developed the application, which originally had another intended use altogether, it revealed a ghost parasite on the head of a young lab tech. Not long after that, with the use of a technological breakthrough invented by a colleague and me, the Galinsky-Barnes window, we learned of the beings and began studying them as much as we were able.
What are they? Ollie asked.
We honestly don't know. We're only now just scratching the surface. But we call them the Gloom, on account of their grey skin and dismal dimension. The truth is, they're beyond our comprehension. Some of the things they're capable of have made us rethink much of what we know about physics and our reality.
This is all very interesting, Toby. But what do they want from us?
That's simple. They regard our bodies as desirable real estate and want to move in. But they just can't hop inside and take control. They must first infect us with their ghost parasites. Once the parasite claims a person as its host, it begins to alter that person internally, readying him or her for its master. And once the process is complete, what's left of the host is just an organic shell into which the Gloom can jump in without contending with the person's consciousness.
But how do we get infected in the first place?
The Gloom are much more advanced than humankind. They've developed a way to manipulate our technology, placing links all over the internet. When these links are activated, they open an interdimensional portal through which the ghost parasites can pass, infecting hosts on the other side. Obviously, we can't see the parasites without the help of technology. The infected only know something is wrong because of their symptoms, the horrible visions, and intense dread. Why the visions and the dread? And what about my panic attacks and mental breakdowns? You've had visions because the parasite keeps an open connection to its place of origin. We think hosts, therefore, get glimpses of their world. As for the mental health issues you've suffered since becoming infected, they're additional symptoms. Among other things, the parasite is altering your mind, killing off your consciousness little by little. A near-constant barrage of signals sent from the parasite to your brain triggers your fight-or-flight response, and it never gets much reprieve. As you can imagine, the suicide rate is on the rise. So, if I have this right, you're saying I have an extra-dimensional being's big-ass pet latched onto the back of my head. Basically. And this bug's job is to erase my consciousness, but keep my body alive for one of these beings to use as its own. Yes. It's been almost 2 years since I've been this way. Why hasn't a gloom taken possession of me yet? Ah, that's one of the many fascinating parts of all this. Something occurred that the gloom hadn't anticipated. The human mind instinctively knows it's being manipulated by the parasite. Consequently, it puts protections in place to slow the process. In some rare cases, the process is halted altogether. What protections? Tell me, Ollie, did you drink excessively before 2 years ago? No, I hadn't drank at all. The parasite doesn't respond well to substances, drugs, or alcohol, or even less so to habitual use. So it ends up taking years to accomplish what might have taken only several weeks. Ollie grabbed a bottle of bourbon from atop the refrigerator, uncapped it, and took a long drink. Okay, so, how do we get this thing off me? You have to die. Hold on, mustn't have heard you correctly. Did you just say, I have to die?
I did.
What the hell are you talking about? If the parasite thinks you've expired, it retracts its tendrils, loosens its hold, and crawls away to die itself. When this happens, I'll use some specially designed equipment to capture and contain it. Then, you'll be resuscitated.
I don't fucking think so.
It's the only way.
What's your success rate with this, procedure?
Out of 54 I've performed to date, I've lost 6.
That's not too bad.
Though I would have preferred to have saved them all, I'm proud of that number.
Do you work for the government or something?
I'm a private contractor hired by the government from time to time.
Ollie took another long pull from the bottle. Okay, let's do this.
Do I have your permission to invite my colleague up to your apartment?
Colleague?
Yes, she handles the medical portion.
Ollie shrugged, giving his approval. Toby made the call. When the recipient answered, Toby was all business.
He's ready, he said into the phone. Second floor apartment, last door to the left. Bring the gear.
Ollie nervously sipped from a beer as they waited. A few minutes later, a young woman let herself into the apartment.
Ollie, this is Aurora Harper, a nurse whose expertise has come in quite handy since we began these extractions.
Aurora, a confident and capable-looking woman, couldn't have been older than 30. She neither smiled or frowned, favoring instead a cool composure. Her large amber eyes betrayed this effect somewhat, as there was something undeniably expressive and warm in them. She wore black nursing scrubs but was otherwise covered in tattoos. Tiny stainless steel balls dotted each of her cheeks where they were pierced through, slightly exaggerating her dimples, and her long cotton candy pink hair was pulled back in a fashion that favored function over style.
"Please remove your shirt and lie down on the floor, Mr. Quinn,"
she instructed her patient. "You can call me Ollie."
"Okay," Ollie, it is.
Shirtless, Ollie laid on his back on the carpeted floor beside a wooden coffee table.
To begin,
Aurora said,
I'll administer an anesthetic to induce loss of consciousness. Then I'll administer a solution to induce cardioplegia.
Cardioplegia? Ollie asked.
Means your heart will stop.
Oh.
After that,
Aurora continued,
once the parasite loosens its hold and is safely contained, I'll begin the necessary steps to resuscitate you.
No disrespect intended, but, are nurses qualified to do this?
Not at all. Honestly, I could lose my nursing license for my part in this. My role as a medical professional doesn't permit me to diagnose or prescribe. I'm not even supposed to administer the drugs I'm about to give you. Nor are you supposed to be anesthetized until you've fasted for several hours, and you've been on a steady diet of alcohol for some time. So I'm not following any regulations or protocols here. When it comes to extractions, I guess you could say I've gone rogue. But I have zero ethical conflict about it. Knowing what we know about the Gloom's intentions, I'd call it an acceptable risk.
I guess you're right.
Besides, I've been where you are right now.
You were infected by one of those things too?
I was. That's how Toby here found me. Saved my life. And I've been working beside him ever since.
This was encouraging news. While Aurora readied the anesthetic and cardioplegic and portable defibrillator, Toby placed the containment unit, a large glass cube, on the floor, its open side at the top of Ollie's head. A green light glowed brightly on the digital readout of a panel at the cube's base, signifying it was currently unoccupied.
All set?
Toby asked Aurora. Aurora nodded. I need to take a leak.
Go ahead,
Toby said.
We'll wait.
Not bothering to put his shirt back on, Ollie rose from the floor. He strode across the apartment to the bathroom. Rather than a door, there was a curtain to prevent prying eyes from landing on one's bathroom activities. He pushed it aside and entered. After emptying his overly full bladder into the toilet, he stood at the sink, looking at his reflection in a mirror splattered with dried toothpaste. He looked unwell. This made sense, of course. Over the last 2 years, he had been decidedly more destructive than health conscious, and it was beginning to show. His eyes, which were the color of a cloudless spring sky, looked wild, and the whites were extremely bloodshot. The dark brown hair on his head was somewhat disheveled. His scruffy face hadn't met with a shaving razor for 5 days or so, and his complexion had gone from ivory to almost jaundiced. Leaning forward, Ollie searched his reflection for any trace of a ghost parasite on his head, but he saw nothing. He knew it was there. In truth, he had been keenly aware of its presence since Tony's imaging application had revealed it to him. The thought of it there, living off him, changing him, making him sick. He wanted it gone. No, he needed it gone. Ollie exited the bathroom and spoke to his guests.
Let's get this shit over with.
Please lie down on the floor and we'll get started,
Aurora instructed.
Take a deep breath, Ollie,
Toby said, placing a hand on his shoulder.
We'll do our best to make sure you come back from this.
Ollie, heeding Toby's advice, took a deep breath as he lowered himself to the floor. Toby then moved the containment unit back to the top of Ollie's head, pressing a button on its panel. He assured the device was ready for when the time came. Ollie winced when Aurora slipped the IV spike into the vein of his forearm. Aurora carefully administered the anesthetic. While not entirely necessary, the anesthetic was a kindness. Stopping a person's heart while conscious was just cruel. She waited until Ollie was fully under before medically inducing cardioplegia. Soon, Ollie's heart ceased to beat. For all intents and purposes, he was quite dead. The minutes ticked by so slowly it was almost unbearable. Toby and Aurora waited, not sure what the outcome might be. They hadn't confessed to Ollie that they'd never performed an extraction on someone who's been infected for so long. though neither said it aloud. They were both filled with concern. It was a strange sensation when Ollie's essence was expelled from his body. At first, as he detached from it, there was a great deal of pain. Then suddenly, there was nothing but a mild tingle, as if a low current of electricity flowed endlessly through him. He looked down at his hands. They were pale blue, and beneath the surface, golden bursts of light interwoven with threads of fiery orange extended up his arms. Unburdened by the weight of his flesh and bones, he stood over the scene where Aurora and Toby were knelt worriedly over his vacant husk on the floor.
"Hey guys,"
Ollie called out,
"check this shit out."
But they couldn't hear him, nor could they see him. Being dead wasn't as bad as it was strange, Ollie decided. If they couldn't bring him back, this would definitely take some getting used to. Something caught Ollie's eye from across the room. A cat had found its way into the apartment and was walking towards him. The cat's coat was completely grey, save a patch of white on its chest. It must have come in the kitchen window, through the place where a broken pane of glass had been remedied with a square bit of cardboard and strips of duct tape. When it decided it was close enough to Ollie, the cat sat and stared at him with emerald green eyes. Clearly, the animal could see him.
"Hello there, kitty,"
Ollie said. Then he mumbled to himself,
"What am I doing talking to a cat?"
Ollie was dead for nearly 5 minutes when the door of the containment unit slid securely into place, closing the cube. The glowing light on the digital readout of the panel went from green to red, indicating it was indeed occupied. Hastily, Toby moved the box away from Ollie.
"Okay," he said to Aurora. "Do your thing."
With well-trained hands, Aurora turned on the IED. She then attached the defibrillator pads, one on the upper right part of Ollie's chest and the other on the lower left side. After performing a brief analysis to determine Ollie didn't have a heartbeat, she pressed the shock button. The jolt caused Ollie's body to convulse. For a moment, from Ollie's disembodied point of view, the room shook as if from a minor earthquake. His essence vibrated along with it. This claimed the cat's attention. No longer interested in Ollie, it turned and strutted back to the kitchen window, leaped up onto the sill, and squeezed itself through the space between the cardboard and the frame. And then it was gone. Aurora felt a pulse. Not detecting one, she began manual CPR. Ollie looked around the room, his eyes falling on a dark figure in the corner. It didn't take more than a second or two for him to realize that it was a gloom, presumably one that had been waiting for his body. Lean and muscular, the gloom's naked skin was gray and smooth and radiated a dark blue aura from head to toe. Eyes as black as starless space stared at Ollie with unwavering purpose. Two small holes where a nose ought to have been flared and rested, then flared and rested again. Rather than a mouth, there was nothing but skin extending down to a sharp chin. Thoroughly examining the being, Ollie noted that it was utterly sexless, at least as far as he could tell. It stretched out its long arms grandly, hands palm up, fingers spread, as if to wordlessly communicate that this was their world now. Then, returning one of its arms to its side, it raised the other and pointed directly at Ollie. This gesture wasn't at Ollie's lifeless husk on the floor, but at his essence. He took it to mean, as far as the gloom was concerned, humans were beneath them. Just tools, resources to be used as they saw fit. The gloom had turned and walked away, passing right through the wall of the apartment. Had Ollie been in his body at that moment, he knew a shiver would have worked its way down his spine. After a few cycles of CPR, Aurora checked Ollie's vitals again. Ollie felt himself being drawn back to his body.
"He's got a pulse,"
Aurora declared with relief.
"Well done,"
Toby congratulated her. Roughly 2 hours later, groggy and pale, Ollie sat in one of the chairs at the kitchen table with a blanket wrapped around him.
I can't believe I was really dead, he said in disbelief.
What was it like for you? Toby asked.
All I remember is a sort of out-of-body experience. I was standing in this very room, watching you two do your thing. Then a cat showed up.
Interesting, Toby commented. I didn't see a cat.
Neither did I,
Aurora said.
But my focus was elsewhere.
Oh, and I had a brief interaction with the gloom.
Well, that's a first. Tell me everything. What did it do? What did it say?
Didn't do much. Didn't say anything either. Come to think of it, it didn't even have a mouth.
We think they communicate with one another telepathically.
It didn't communicate with me like that. Just stared at me. Before it left, it pointed at me. Gave me the creeps.
So,
Toby said, thinking out loud,
once we're expelled from our bodies and exist in an incorporeal state, our perception shifts so that we can observe the gloom. And probably much more than that.
Fascinating.
This information might come in handy.
Damn, I'm thirsty,
Ollie said, making a smacking sound with his tongue on the roof of his mouth.
What'll it be, Ollie? Bourbon or beer?
Toby asked.
Neither. I think I'll have water.
Good man. Coming right up.
What's next?
Ollie asked Toby and Aurora.
The plan, Toby began, is to get this ghost parasite back to our lab. If it survives, we intend to use it to gain more insight into the gloom.
How so?
We have a few volunteers. Terminally ill men and women, all of whom have consented to let us infect them with the ghost parasites. We will then monitor them and keep them under lock and key until the gloom take over their bodies.
Seems morally questionable.
Scientific pursuits, especially those in the name of the greater good, often appear that way. Remember, this is entirely voluntary. No one is being forced to do anything. Each of them know the importance of this.
Say the gloom slip into the bodies of those people. Then what?
At that point, it is hoped that we'll be able to speak to the gloom. Maybe even come to some sort of peaceful understanding.
And if not?
Failing that, we'll interrogate them with prejudice, try to find a weakness.
And if that doesn't yield anything useful?
Then we'll no doubt find ourselves at war. And it will be unlike any war we fought in the history of our species.
Though none of them mentioned it, they were all thinking the same thing. The gloom were all around them, observing them, working to take possession of humankind. There was still plenty of work to be done against this threat, and there was still plenty more to dread.
You have been listening to Cryopod Tapes. Today's story was Gloom, written by James Carlson. This episode was produced and narrated by Ted Huggins. The original music was also produced by Ted Huggins. If you enjoyed this episode, then please leave a nice review. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you next time on the Cryopod Tapes.